For today I have a somewhat short but important message to bring that I want you all to hear. For which, let's turn to Daniel chapter 7. For today's message, I want to present a biblical perspective on the rise and fall of the Roman Empire as it relates to the approaching fall of the American Empire, which at present is clearly on a determined path to provoke and to foment nuclear war with Russia. The Bible's perspective on the fall of the ancient Roman Empire is actually quite different from the accepted narrative of secular history, the most well-known presentation of which is found in the classic historical work titled The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, authored by British historian Edward Gibbon, published in six volumes in the late 1700s. Gibbon's work is held by some to be the most scholarly and authoritative compilation of Imperial Rome's history that exists on the planet. In some respects, I'm sure it is that. Britannica describes the work as, quote, a continuous narrative from the 2nd century A.D. to the fall of Constantinople in 1453, distinguished by its rigorous scholarship, its historical perspective, and its incomparable literary style. It is divided into two parts, equal in bulk but different in treatment. The first half covers about 300 years to the end of the empire in the West, about 480 A.D., and the second half, nearly 1,000 years, are compressed. Gibbon viewed the Roman Empire as a single entity in undeviating decline from the ideals of political and intellectual freedom that characterized the classical literature he had read. End quote there from Britannica. So Gibbon's conclusion is that the Roman Empire officially met its end when Constantinople, formerly known as Byzantium, now known as Istanbul, fell to the Turks in 1453 A.D. Gibbon, by the way, was raised in an Anglican home. For a time, he converted to Roman Catholicism, but was then most influenced by the popular deism of his day. He certainly did not take the Bible literally or as authoritative, and he developed a rather cynical view of what he deemed to be the superstitions of what he called organized Christianity, which, along with barbarian invasions, moral decline and decadence, loss of revenue, and resulting loss of control of the army, Gibbon listed as one of four factors that he concluded caused the fall of the Roman Empire, having caused a loss of, quote, civic virtue, as he put it, or patriotic duty. Other historians list other causes for the collapse of the Roman Empire. The simple fact, however, is that, like the Jews of Judea, the inhabitants of Rome's occupied territory simply got sick of being ruled by foreign invaders, and they gradually turned against Rome. In the 5th century, Rome lost territory and revenue to the Vandals of North Africa, and at the same time, they lost Spain to the Visigoths. The loss of Spain meant Rome's loss of important territory and administrative control, along with revenue that was badly needed to support Rome's army. And Rome needed its army to keep what territory it still maintained. Finally, the city of Rome itself was sacked in 476 AD by the Germanic king Odoacer and his army, who deposed Romulus Augustulus, the last Roman emperor to rule the western part of the Roman Empire. At that point, then, Constantinople, also known as the old Greek city of Byzantium, became the sole capital of what was left of the Roman Empire in the east, which then continued to decline until the fall of Constantinople to the Turks in 1453. So that, in a nutshell, is a secular version of the decline and fall of the once mighty Roman Empire. However, the secular version does not agree with the Bible's prophetic version, which, of course, is God's perspective and is therefore far more accurate and reliable. So that brings us to Daniel chapter 7. Here in Daniel 7, the prophet Daniel is given a vision of four beasts that are symbolic or that signify four kings that represent four world empires. They are, in fact, the same four world empires that are signified by the great image that King Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream in Daniel chapter 2, where Daniel miraculously both reminded King Nebuchadnezzar what his dream was and also interpreted it for him as God had revealed it to Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel 2 had a head of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Daniel then explained that the image represented a progression of four world empires that would exist over the course of mankind's existence, from Daniel's day right up to the present time, and until Christ establishes his earthly kingdom. And then here in Daniel 7, Daniel himself is given a vision of those same four empires, signified here by four beasts. He says in verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. This signifies the Babylonian Empire, which was then followed by the Medo-Persian Empire in verse 5. And behold, another beast, the second like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. Verse 6, after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. This, of course, signifies the Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great. Those four heads, symbolizing Alexander's four generals, among whom his empire was divided after his death. And then in verse 7, Daniel says, and after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Then to verse 15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. Verse 17, these great beasts, which are four kings, representing four empires, of course, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Verse 19, Daniel said, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others. We need to note that phrase, diverse from all the others. Exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So this fourth empire then, diverse and very different from the first three, notably dreadful and terrible, by necessity symbolizes the Roman Empire, under whose hand and authority our Lord was crucified, that being, of course, the Roman form of execution, and also under whose hand and authority Jerusalem was destroyed and leveled in 70 AD. This fourth beast, the Roman Empire, plays a very important role in Bible prophecy. This very same beast is also seen in Revelation 13, and is revealed there as a conglomeration of the first three beasts we see here in Daniel 7. John says in Revelation 13, verse 1, and I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So that same Roman Empire is also symbolized in Daniel chapter 2 by the two legs of iron on Nebuchadnezzar's image. They're signifying there the Roman Empire's division into two parts, the eastern and western halves of the empire. As Daniel says in chapter 2 and verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. Much the same language as we see in Daniel 7. After which then Nebuchadnezzar's image further devolves into feet with 10 toes, part of iron and part of clay, which Daniel explains in verse 41 of chapter 2. It says to Nebuchadnezzar, whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. But they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And this signifies the futility of today's globalist utopian dream, where they vainly imagine that they can build a global empire to unite all the peoples of the earth under a global government. Their attempts to do so will end in futility. We read in Psalm 2 that God laughs at their attempts to do so. Back here to chapter 7, there's something here that is very important for everyone to notice. First of all, we need to take notice that there is no mention here of any other empires that have come to power, which is because the focus in this chapter, in chapter 2, in chapter 13 of Revelation, etc., is on the empire that most directly both serves the devil in opposition to the Lord Jesus and his kingdom, but then at the same time also serves God's purpose in fulfilling God's prophetic plan. Secondly, we need to notice here that just as in Daniel chapter 2, where the king saw that stone that smote the image upon the feet and break them to pieces, there signifying Christ's establishment of his earthly kingdom to replace all others, so we read also here in chapter 7, this fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, diverse from all others, remains in power or existence in one form or another, and after devolving through some changes, right up to the time the Lord Jesus returns in power and glory to raise his saints and establish his earthly reign. So we read here in Daniel 7, verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, but shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and shall subdue three kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. And they, times and laws, shall be given into his hand until a time, times, and the dividing of time. That means 3.5 years, by the way. We see that same phrase, time, times, and half a time, in Revelation 12 and 13. It signifies 3.5 years, 1260 days, or 42 months. Verse 26, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion, to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. And so then, this prophecy, as that in Daniel chapter 2, teaches that the fourth empire, that of Rome, remains in power or existence in one form or another, after going through some changes, right up to the time the Lord Jesus returns in power and glory to raise his saints and to establish his earthly reign, and is therefore still in existence today. It hasn't fallen yet, but its fall is certainly approaching. Daniel 7:19 says that this fourth kingdom is diverse from all others, which is because while it began as a military political empire, it became a religious empire that has in fact pretended to be a Christian empire from the 4th century onward, from the days that the Roman emperors Constantine and Theodosius issued their edicts of Milan and Thessalonica, thus establishing the universal or Catholic state church. And that despite its claim to be Christian, is just as antichrist as it can be. When Rome was sacked in 476 AD, Rome itself was not at all destroyed. The city continued to exist and continued to be the capital and the seat of government of the Roman Catholic Church, as was ruled by the popes, to whom, by the way, Odoacer and the other kings of Europe continued to pay homage. After the fall of Constantinople in 1453, the popes assumed the official title of Pontifex Maximus that had previously been held by the Roman emperors, beginning with Caesar Augustus forward. Prior to Augustus and under the early Roman Republic, that title of Pontifex Maximus, which is Latin for Supreme Pontiff, was a distinctly religious office in the ancient Roman polytheistic pagan religion. That title was then politicized, though, and used by the emperors of Rome. But then after the fall of Constantinople to the Ottoman Empire and the death of the final Roman emperor, Constantine XI, in 1453, that title, Pontifex Maximus, became part of the Roman Catholic Papacy's official title as the Bishop of Rome and the new head of the old Roman Empire. The papacy continued to acquire and to accrue more and more political power over the kings of Europe, which, by the way, is why John refers to the woman, the harlot that rides this very same beast in Revelation 17:18, as that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. The Roman Catholic papacy has thirsted for and obtained political power ever since the 4th century, when the Bishop of Rome, Bishop Ambrose, who lived from 340 to 397 A.D., threatened to withhold the sacraments from Emperor Theodosius unless Theodosius submitted to the bishop's ecclesiastical authority. And so Theodosius bowed to the papal throne and performed the penance that the bishop commanded him. And that, by the way, is the first recorded instance of the Pope's use of the threat of interdict to control the kings of Europe, which was then used again and again throughout the Middle Ages. With the onset, though, of the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century, the papacy did lose the temporal power it once held, but thanks to its vast army of Jesuit agents and infiltrators, has now regained that power through its control of the American Empire, as we detailed in our video series, America the Babylon. And so back now to Daniel chapter 7. And regarding this fourth beast, dreadful and terrible. As mentioned, we see the very same beast not only in Revelation 13, but also in Revelation 17. Except that in Revelation 17, we see further developments in the form of the beast. Because in chapter 17, we see that there is a woman, signifying a harlotress religious system, riding that beast, holding its reins, and dictating its steps. John says in Revelation 17, verse 3, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon the scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration," or in great amazement, in other words. Here we see the final form of the Roman Empire as it will exist just prior to our Lord's return. Those ten horns are ten kings who give their power to the beast for a short time, also signified by those ten toes on Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel chapter 2. And as we showed in our video series, America the Babylon, Daughter of the Harlot, especially in part 2 of that video, this woman pictured here most definitely signifies the Roman Catholic papacy, who holds the reins and is in control of the final form of the Roman Empire. That final form being Rome's vassal state, the American Empire. And so then, the Roman Empire did not cease to exist either in 476 AD or in 1453 when the Turks sacked Constantinople. The Roman Empire is very much alive and continues to subdue all things, to break in pieces and bruise while it makes warfare against the saints of the Most High, and it also makes war among the nations of the earth to produce regime change at will. It was political and military at first, then it morphed into a religious empire that constantly sought to regain political control and global dominance over the entire planet, which it has now gained through its vassal state, America, that, as we've shown, the Jesuit order raised up for this very purpose. The average Christian refuses to open his eyes to see this truth. Some of the members of my own family refuse to see it. The so-called pastors and the so-called Christian churches in this land are far too cowardly and far too ignorant to see it, let alone to preach it. Instead, they have surrendered their churches to this very same beast. They prominently display the beast flag in their so-called sanctuaries. And they even have their school children pledge allegiance to that flag. They will not accept the truth that America itself and the empire it has built is, in fact, the revived Roman Empire seen in Daniel 2 and 7, Revelation 13 and 17. And the ignorant fools that call themselves patriots and are still riding the Donald Trump train would see these as fighting words. But as I have said many times, what every person hearing my voice today needs to see is that in its present form and function, the American federal government in Washington, D.C. is first of all the largest and most powerful organized crime syndicate on the face of the earth, but is also without doubt the greatest force of evil in the world today, bar none. And is even now, quite dreadfully and terribly, as the prophet Daniel said, working night and day to exacerbate and to escalate the situation in Eastern Europe in order to foment nuclear war via its proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, which I've been saying since 2016 is the globalist ultimate objective, to foment a limited nuclear exchange between the U.S., Russia, and China that will supposedly scare the nations of the world into accepting their globalist New World Order. There are several recent developments along these lines that we all need to be aware of, including signs that, just as happened with the ancient Roman Empire, the American Empire today is facing a growing body of opposition that is sick and tired of being bullied and dominated by the American military, by the American dollar, by the Federal Reserve and the IMF, and by the American Empire in general. An article was published last Wednesday, February 8th, on the Greek website War News 24/7. It was titled, "Scream of Despair in Germany. The dollar will collapse and this leads to World War III. May we escape the disaster." The article details a presentation made a few days before that, last February 4th, by a well-known German political writer named Wolfgang Bittner. He made a presentation at an online conference held by a European political consortium or think tank known as the Schiller Institute. This conference was titled "The Age of Reason or the Annihilation of Humanity," and it was held to highlight how close the world is right now to nuclear Armageddon. Several speakers addressed this conference, one of whom was Wolfgang Bittner, who the War News article describes as, quote, "a German writer and political intellectual who belongs to the category of Germans that, as they report in Moscow, is aware of the history and criticality of what is happening." In other words, he knows what really started this war in Ukraine and what is resulting from it. Bittner's message to the Schiller Institute conference very well describes the fast-growing anti-American sentiment that now prevails in Europe and around the world, outside of the ruling elite, that is. His statement here is extremely important for us all to hear and to grasp, because it also actually gives the true cause of the war in Ukraine and the true culprits that caused it. The quote here begins with Bittner addressing the 2014 coup in Ukraine that was staged by then Vice President Joe Biden, along with Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and company, meaning the CIA. As a result of that staged coup, the formerly pro-Russian president of Ukraine was ousted and replaced by an American-controlled puppet, Petro Poroshenko, who was then replaced in 2019 by another America-controlled puppet, that being the actor and comedian Vladimir Zelensky, literally a comedian before he was elected president. And as another result of that coup, Russia moved quickly to retake and annex the Crimean Peninsula that actually had been part of Russia for centuries. That annexation met with no local resistance, actually, and was welcomed by the Russian-speaking people of Crimea. Both of the Ukrainian puppets then, Poroshenko and Zelensky, oversaw continued hostilities, shelling and attacks against the Russian-speaking people of eastern Ukraine and the Donbass region and other areas that were also recently occupied and annexed into Russia. I'm going to put this up on the screen so you can all follow along as I read through this very crucial message regarding that stage coup of 2014 that started this war. Bittner stated as follows, "The 2014 coup in Ukraine was the beginning of a deliberate conflict that Germany and the European Union were increasingly drawn into. Putin's offer of cooperation since 2007, when he campaigned for a common economic space from Vladivostok to Lisbon. The United States prevented it. After the coup that began, they, the U.S., coldly occupied Ukraine and set fire to Russia's doorstep. Kiev ignored the Minsk Agreement, and Russia's legal demands for security guarantees remained unanswered in the media. And I would also add, they went unreported in the media. As a result, on February 24, 2022, Russian troops invaded Ukraine. The result was an outcry from so-called Western values and giant war propaganda accompanied by extensive opacilla, or eyewash in other words. The United States and NATO had begun waging a covert war against Russia with the help of the tool made Ukraine. Meanwhile, the nuclear disaster clock shows 90 seconds until midnight," which we're going to amend here in a minute. "However, subordinated, ideological politicians in the European Union follow Washington's instructions to the detriment of their countries. Both Germany and the EU, as a supposed leading European power, with the president of the commission, Ursula von der Leyen, who came to the rescue, contributed to the deterioration of the situation. It is clear that the Western alliance under the United States intends to defeat Russia by any means at its disposal. It is particularly tragic that Germany is letting itself take a stand against Russia for the third time. This happened in World War I and World War II, and it is happening again. With the unconditional surrender in 1945, Germany fell entirely into the hands of the United States, which follows a long-term strategy for, which is mainly used to prevent cooperation between Germany and Russia. Which I would add is why Joe Biden ordered the U.S. Navy to sabotage and blow up the Nord Stream pipelines in the Baltic Sea. I'll come back to that in a minute. Bittner continues, Germany is now being used as a spearhead against Russia, Japan and South Korea against China. The United States wants to use all its power to make their unfounded claim of world domination, even if it means risking World War III. The Berlin government was intimidated into handing over Leopard tanks, heavy offensive weapons, to Ukraine. Ukrainian ruler Vladimir Zelensky is now calling for long-range fighter jets and missiles. Of course, now Britain has agreed to provide both of those to Ukraine. The last few weeks have shown that the supply of such weapons can only make the situation worse in Ukraine. The more the West offers, the longer this controversy will last. Bittner said, in addition to the acute nuclear threat, the consequences of the conflict caused by the United States are serious. Russia has long begun to disconnect from the West, open new avenues with new partners, and defend itself against the United States. Russia is not alone in this. More than half of humanity no longer wants to tolerate irrational demands and oppression by the United States. He said it can be noted that the BRICS organization and Shanghai Cooperation Organization are becoming more and more popular. Work is being done on an economic and financial system different from the Western one, which is dominated by the United States. Among other things, the dominance of the dollar as a top currency in the world is being questioned, but it still means a lot of controversy, because the United States will not allow itself to be bankrupt without resistance. They have strong military power, and this must be taken into account in all future efforts for a more peaceful world. Two nuclear forces are currently facing a war of representatives that could escalate at any time. May we save it, said Bittner. End quote. Personally, I wish some of my own family members would see things as clearly as this German political writer sees them. I wish the American people would see things as clearly as most Europeans see them. But sadly, they won't see it, and they will continue singing, I'm proud to be an American, and God bless America, and my country tis of thee, while they continue blaming Putin and China and anyone else aside from the real culprit that fomented this war in Ukraine and the Holocaust that may be coming, which is the American Empire. Another major development took place this past week that makes matters worse. The same day that the above article appeared in War News 24/7, which was February 8th, another ground-shaking article was published that immediately gained worldwide attention, having been written by Pulitzer Prize-winning veteran investigative reporter Seymour Hersh. This is the same man that covered the Nixon Watergate scandal for the New York Times, and he broke open the My Lai massacre during the Vietnam War, and he also exposed the U.S. military's atrocities against prisoners and detainees at the Abu Ghraib prison, among other nasty, inconvenient revelations he's brought out. He's now 85 years old, but he's still at it. On February 8th, Hersh published a long, finely detailed article exposing the detailed plan that was ordered by Jesuit Joe Biden and followed by specially trained U.S. Navy divers operating under cover of a NATO exercise to plant remotely triggered bombs to destroy three of the four Nord Stream gas pipelines that was designed to carry Russian gas to Germany under the Baltic Sea. Hersh quoted an anonymous source, quote, with direct knowledge of the operational planning, end quote. So he had another deep throat whistleblower as in the Watergate scandal. I'll post the entire Hersh article to the sermon audio page for this message. It's really, truly a fascinating read. I suggest you read it. Of course, the White House has denied and slammed Hersh's report, calling it utterly false and complete fiction. However, both China and Russia are taking the report very seriously. So, by the way, are the victims of the attack, the beleaguered people of Germany. which is the nation most impacted and damaged by Biden's decision to blow the pipelines, and is also suffering the most damage from Biden's economic sanctions against Russia. They're getting sick and tired of American domination at this point, as Bittner points out. China has come out demanding that the United States explain its actions with the Nord Stream. Again, according to the Greek website War News 24/7, Putin has called the Nord Stream sabotage, combined with recent announcements to provide Ukraine with new fighter jets and long-range precision missiles, an act of war. An act of war. A cautious belly. As a result, Putin has announced that Russia is now acknowledging the U.S. and Britain as, quote, co-belligerents in the Ukraine war, basically saying that we are at war with Russia. Putin says now that if the private negotiations for a settlement that are now underway fail, Russia is now changing its nuclear policy to allow for a preventative tactical nuclear first strike that will follow a 72-hour deadline to evacuate nuclear strike zones. I've got just one more article I want to quote from. It's an article that was actually reposted this past Thursday by Paul Craig Roberts, titled A Nanosecond to Midnight. Not 90 seconds, a nanosecond to midnight, meaning that's how close we are to nuclear holocaust. This was posted on February 9th as a must-read. Paul Craig Roberts introduces this article, says, Gilbert Doctorow, an intelligent and informed Russian expert, explains that it is indeed a nanosecond to midnight. Roberts says this is an extremely important warning, which, like my own, is likely to be ignored at our peril. In no Western capital or print and TV media has any recognition been given to the consequence or the extremely reckless and dangerous continuing provocations of Russia. The American neoconservative attack on Russia is the most insane folly in human history. The Kremlin has encouraged the provocations by accepting them and by prolonging a conflict that should have been a quick victory in order to prevent U.S. and NATO involvement from widening the conflict. The situation has unfolded precisely as I predicted, and now Doctorow says we have reached the breaking point, says Paul Craig Roberts as he introduces this article. The article is titled The Coming Existential Threat, by Gilbert Doctorow. By the way, as for Doctorow's credentials, I would add that he is hailed as a professional Russia watcher going back to 1965. For 25 years, he worked for U.S. and European multinational companies in their dealings with Russia. He now lives in Brussels, Belgium, and publishes analytical international affairs articles on the portal of the Belgian daily publication La Libre Belgique. Doctorow now writes as follows. As I returned to Brussels on Sunday after a month of travels in exotic and warm lands south of the equator. The reentry shock upon arrival in Belgium was a lot greater than the 27 degrees centigrade drop in outdoor air temperature. After a month of only very limited reception of Russian news, last night I switched on Russian state television's news and talk show 60 Minutes and got a full blast of the current state of relations with the U.S., which are very close to doomsday. He says, allow me to share with you the key point. Namely, the soon-to-be-announced changes to the Russian doctrine on first use of nuclear weapons, and there are new, more precise red lines that have come about from the plans for Russia's partition and destruction that seem to be aired daily on U.S. television. As usual, Yevgeny Popov, State Duma member and host of 60 Minutes, this is Russia's version of 60 Minutes, of course, put a lot of video segments from Western television up on the screen, including a lengthy statement by Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, former commander of all U.S. forces in Europe from 2014 to 2017, on how the Ukrainians must be given long-range precision missiles for them to attack Russian Crimea and also further into the Russian heartland. The interview from which this declaration was made does not yet appear in Google search, he writes, but from interviews posted in 2022, it is clear that Hodges is no madman, and his statements must, as Popov said, be taken with utmost seriousness. I would also add that Hodges would not make those statements if he hadn't been cleared to do so by Jesuit Joe Biden. The context, of course, for the radical escalation now being discussed in the United States is the expectation of a massive Russian offensive to begin shortly as the anniversary of the special military operation approaches. The imminent defeat of Ukrainian forces has focused minds in Washington. One of the regular panelists on 60 Minutes then faced the cameras directly and said that Russia's nuclear doctrine is under revision in light of these aggressive plans being aired in the United States. So that Russia is headed toward the policy of preventative tactical nuclear strikes similar to what the United States has. Moreover, if Ukraine targets Crimea and heartland Russia, then Russia will respond according to plans now being laid down. These plans foresee counterstrikes against U.S. military installations in Europe and against the continental United States using hypersonic missiles. The threat of counterstrikes in Europe and the U.S. is being made public and explicit so that no one is in doubt about what to expect from the Kremlin. So here we are. The Russians are stripping away the fiction of a proxy war and revealing the co-belligerent status of the U.S. and its NATO allies in preparation for a kinetic war with NATO. Dr. Elvin closes his article by stating as follows. Allow me also to share with my readership the bitter medicine that I just shared with our daughter. Look for an escape hatch. Either, as I fervently hope, there will be an anti-war movement in the USA, in Europe, arising from the shock therapy news now developing with respect to the coming kinetic war between NATO and Russia, or, failing that, it will be every man for himself. He says back in 1937 there were Jews in Berlin who decided they could ride out the storm and stay put. There were others who took the first boats out to England, to the U.S., to South America. All of us in the Northern Hemisphere now may be facing the same existential choice. So then, we are now, February 12, 2023, at the place I warned about back in 2016, saying then that the powers that be are planning a nuclear war, with Russia and China striking first in 5 or 6 years. It's now been 7 years since I said that. This message is not intended to scare anyone. We are not to fear what man can do to us, and we've been preparing for these days for some time now. But I have two main reasons for bringing this message. First and foremost, I'm bringing the message to wake up sleeping, stubborn, and blinded eyes to the reckless and diabolical evil of the American empire that has thwarted both Putin's and Zelensky's attempts to negotiate a settlement of this war, in fact ordering the puppet Zelensky not to negotiate back in March of 2022, and then again in the last day or two. Because America does not want peace. America wants war. Because the American empire in its present form is the continuation and last day's manifestation of the Roman Empire, the beast of Revelation 13 and of Daniel 7, taking its marching orders directly from the head Jesuit at the Vatican in Rome. The empire has not fallen yet, but one day, maybe very soon, it will. It'll fall on that glorious day when, as we just read in Daniel 7:27, and the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. So my first goal here is to open blind eyes to the great evil that America has become. And secondly, my other main objective in bringing this message is to motivate you, due to the lateness of the hour, to motivate us all to set aside our petty earthly concerns and to set our affection on things above, as Paul says in Colossians 3. To redeem the time, because the days are evil. We all need to be actively fellowshipping in the gospel, as Brother Jade preached first hour. We all need to prioritize serving the Lord instead of serving our earthly interests. The hour is late. We need to wake up. As the article said, it's a nanosecond before midnight. We need to focus on things that have eternal rewards. Peter said, 1 Peter 4:7, but the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And above all things have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins.